Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Grunsch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Salomon?
Here.
Quorum present.
Moving on to the consent agenda, the purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item in your new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We have two items, approval of the May 14th City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented, and we have approval to appoint Tricia Wright to the Boynton District Library Board with term expiring on April 30th, 2023.
Mr. Mayor, since we have under 9C, the Boynton District Library update, I would request that we move the appointment of Trish Wright down to 9C-A. Other than that, I would make a motion to approve the minutes of the May 14th meeting.
Any discussion, commissioners? Okay, we'll do that. We'll make item B as part of 9C. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Moving on to hearing citizens' comments on non-agenda items. Okay. Moving on to course. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Barb. State your name, please, for the record.
My name is Barb Malpashia, and I live at 1003 Hall Street in Boynton City. And I guess I just had a question. I've been out of town, and I just heard a lot of talk. Are the lofts on what's called the lofts on Main Street, is that a go?
The lofts on Lake Street.
Lake Street, yes.
Was approved by the Planning Commission last Monday.
Okay.
7-0.
Okay. And were they also granted a 10-year tax abatement?
That is a discussion item. The whole process is continuing.
Okay. All right. Thank you. My last thing is, we had kind of a little accident downtown. We had an elderly lady who was just going on. She had come out of Cafe Sante, and a skateboarder danger. I was just wondering if there's any way to keep the skateboards and the bicycles off the sidewalks. Just on the main streets.
We do have ordinances in place that would,
okay,
be directed to our police department, and we can get back to you on that.
Okay. They would take a little better care. I think she was frightened more than hurt, but there were several people that were very appalled. And I know the young skateboarder was really, really sorry. Only 12 years old. So just being 12, not thinking. So, and he was looking down and didn't see her, but it does get pretty crowded downtown. And I just wondered if we could do something. I didn't know if there was a rule in place or anything in place for that. So I just wondered if there was one thing about that.
Okay. Right. So now we'll refer to staff, and particularly the police department.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Any other comments? City manager's report, Mike.
Yes, a few items for you. Just a reminder that our spring leaf collection program wraps up at the end of next week on June 7th. That's a Friday. We're also in the middle of our spring residential rubbish collection program. That program wraps up next week as well on Thursday, June 6th. Last Thursday in this room, we participated in MSU Extension's first marijuana webinar. This is part of our education and getting up to speed process as we look to revisit those issues at some point. The next one will be held again here as a webinar on June 20th. And that topic will be dealing with framing appropriate conversation around local marijuana regulations. The session will be, all our sessions are between 3 and 4:30 p.m. As a webinar, the public is welcome and there's no charge to them. These sessions will be continuing through October. We'll be putting a full schedule on our website. There will also be an article in the upcoming city newsletter. On a related note, MSU Extension is also partnering with Networks Northwest to hold a similar live session on June 18th, where they'll be talking about some of the same similar topics. That'll be in Charlevoix between 5:30 and 8 p.m. The cost is advertised at $50 per person, but I've reached out to them to see if there's some type of group rates available. We may want to send a couple people to that one as well. And once I get a little more information on the rate structure, I'll have some more communications with the commission. Unless someone else will talk about it now. We heard back from Michigan Department of Treasury on our share of the cost of the fiscally ready communities program last week after I inquired again. The program is only going to be $300, so I told them that's not a problem, that we'll move forward with that. We have a number of road projects that are currently underway. The Crush and Shave project that's taking place on various streets on the south side of the city is substantially completed. All the road surfaces are in, and restoration continues this week. On the North Lake Street Mill and Resurface project, that was delayed due to weather. Concrete curb and sidewalk ramps work is scheduled to hopefully wrap up tomorrow. They were working on that earlier today. They will then be placing asphalt hand patches in front of the new curb areas. That should take place tomorrow or Thursday this week. Then this Thursday and Friday, they'll be doing restoration work behind the curbs. And then the final stuff, other than the marking of the road, will be milling and paving, which will take place next week at the earliest. We estimate that that will take 1 to 2 days of milling and then another 2 days of paving. The road will stay open during that work. The state's MDOT M75 mill and resurface project is on schedule for a June 21st completion date. Off the subject of roads, down along the Boyne River, Riverside Park project off Spring Street, east of Consumers Energy Complex, is substantially complete. So if you haven't checked that out, you may want to do so. If you have any questions about these or other items, I'd be glad to try to address them.
Commissioner, anything? Okay. Moving on to reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. Anything, Mike?
No, sir.
And we do not have any old business. Moving on to new business, number 9A, Public Act 210, District Public Meeting. It is 7:08, and I will open the public hearing, and then I'll turn it over to Mike for your presentation.
All right, thank you. As the City Commission is aware, a mixed-use redevelopment project is being proposed for three properties at the intersection of North Lake and State Streets. The project is being proposed and would be developed by Michigan Community Capital, a nonprofit organization. The project went before the Planning Commission for final site plan review at their meeting last Monday. We have provided a copy of the materials that were provided with regards to that subject. At Team Boyne's meeting on April 12th, we had a representative from MCC, their investment director, Marilyn Crowley, who outlined their nonprofit status and the financial challenges to make a project such as this work. This is consistent with what we have been learning about the economics of residential and other types of developments through the housing solutions and other programs over the last couple of years. Even with their nonprofit status, this project will need outside assistance to make it financially feasible. This is not something unique to MCC or Boyne City. Boyne City has incentivized most of the larger private projects that have occurred in Boyne City, primarily in the Downtown Development Authority, DDA District, and the Local Development Finance Authority, LDFA district, which covers the business park. MCC has been working closely with the Michigan Economic Development Corporation to help close the gap on this and other projects. The MEDC has found MCC, much like Boyne City, to be a reliable partner. Without this outside assistance to close the gap, MCC will not be able to make the project work. And as in many projects where the MEDC is investing in a community and project, they need to see that all the partners have skin in the game. MCC has recently requested that the city consider assisting this project financially by providing them relief from increased taxes for a period of up to 10 years as authorized by the state of Michigan under Public Act 210 of 2005, which is more commonly known as the Commercial Rehabilitation Act. I have attached information regarding the act. In summary, it allows the property taxes on such a redevelopment to be frozen at the pre-redevelopment levels for a period of up to 10 years as determined by the community. This is very similar to tax relief we've given to several industrial park businesses in the business park and elsewhere, except those are allowed for up to 12 years. Under such relief, actual taxes are not decreased, but are not increased based on the new value of the redeveloped property for the approved period of time. The theory is that the relief helps the development or investment make financial sense, and the taxing jurisdictions will benefit long-term since the investment will be there fully taxable long after any relief expires. Given that this proposed development would take place in the DDA / Main Street district, it would affect them most locally among the other taxing jurisdictions. We have three pages showing their most recent year's worth of taxes paid on the three properties that were proposed for the lot on the Lake Street project, and those have been attached. Those provide the detail of the levels of taxation provided to each of the taxing jurisdiction. The most recent annual tax bill for all three properties was $13,372.83. That level would not be changed for a period if it was to be granted ultimately by the City Commission. Even with Public Act 210 relief granted, our local schools would see an immediate benefit of about $70,000 per year in additional revenue immediately on the tax year after the project is completed. The district as proposed is to be established consists of just the three properties that currently include the existing Lally building on North Lake Street, the old First Merit Bank at the intersection of State and North Lake Street, and the old Bike Fix shop on State Street as well. Oops. In order to consider granting commercial rehabilitation act relief, two things must happen, and we're dealing with the first one tonight. First, a district allowing such relief to be granted to projects within it must be established. Notice that a hearing on the matter must be provided, and it has been. Once the district is established, if it is, a property owner may apply for a commercial rehabilitation certificate to the city. A separate public hearing would be needed to be held on any application received. At your April 23rd meeting, the City Commission approved moving this project forward with regards to the establishment of the redevelopment district so that a public hearing on this matter could be held tonight. And if a resolution to establish a commercial rehabilitation district could be considered for your approval, that resolution is attached with your agenda packet. On last week, on Tuesday, May 21st, a public information meeting regarding Public Act 210 was held in this room. About 18 people attended, and we were even thanked for our efforts about getting the word out on this matter. To help with this process, we have retained the services of Matt McClellan of Albemarle. He was at our introductory meeting that we had on this matter when the commission moved it forward to tonight's meeting, and he was also at our public information meeting. Unfortunately, Matt called me this afternoon and took ill over the weekend and is not available to be with us in person. He is available if you need to reach out to him by phone tonight. I'll be glad to try and answer any questions that you have for this evening. Again, what we're doing tonight is holding the public hearing regarding the establishment of the proposed Public Act 210 Commercial Rehabilitation District. And then based on any input received, preliminary recommendation of staff that the commission approved establishing the district. Now, if the commission does do that, as I mentioned earlier, all that does is set up the district. Then we would wait for a specific application to come in from a potential property owner, presumably the lofts on Lake Street, and we go through a separate process that would basically take us probably until July to consider that application. So I'd be glad to answer any questions that you have on it. There's a number of pages of material that were included in your agenda packets on this. I'll bring up the map on it next, but if there's anyone that you'd like to focus on, I'd be glad to do that as well.
Anything, commissioners? Anything in particular?
I just want to clarify that the establishment of our district today is only those three parcels. It's no other area.
That is correct. And then go to that map. And basically, this map here shows the district that's being proposed. You're correct. It is just those three parcels.
Mike, could you go to the schedule that's outlined of how this
would
move from here on?
So on this process, we're about just a little above the middle of the chart. We're at the public hearing, district approval resolution, May 28th by the City Commission. That's right about here. Then after that period, the county has 28 days to consider this matter, and they can oppose it if they'd like. If they do not oppose it, the district comes back to us on June 7th for establishment. I have to double check, make sure that's a valid date, but it should be.
So 28 day window?
That's correct.
Okay.
So Cindy, now would be the proper time to open up to public comments?
Absolutely.
Okay. So at this time, we entertain any comments from staff and or the public. Please state your name for the record. Yes, Michelle.
Do you want us to stand up?
Yes, so please. Yes. Our speaker system is...
It's gone?
It's gone, so now we need your voice.
That was intimidating. Michelle Courtright, 221 Water Street. As a member of the Main Street Board and Boyne Housing Solutions, I am speaking in favor of granting a TIF incentive for this project. The Main Street Board has passed a resolution in full support of the Lofts on Lake Street project. We, Main Street, have granted TIF incentives for numerous projects in the past to the community's benefit. This project fits the criteria and goals for the district. The economic benefit of the development will far surpass what we provide in temporary tax relief. Boyne City Main Street would not lose any immediate revenue by granting this TIF incentive. I recommend the request be approved as submitted. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public commentary? At this point, yes.
Again, I'm going on Mark 1003 Hill Street, Boyne City. I'm a little disappointed that there's not more people here from the city. I guess I'd like this, as I mentioned before, slow our roll just a little bit. I don't know if we can afford to give a 10-year tax abatement. I know that there's people living within the city already that are having a hard time. Taxes have gone up successfully for a few years in a row now. And it doesn't seem fair to, like myself, why would somebody coming in that's going to be making a profit, even though they say they're a nonprofit company, why would we give them a tax abatement? I don't think that we should do that. They're going to be very successful in coming in here. It's not affordable housing, like when they were first started talking about it, they suggested that it would be affordable housing. Hence, the people that need housing right now are people that can't afford a mortgage. I know this because we have a home for sale here in Point City, and people either wanted to flip it and use it for an Airbnb, or there's those that can't afford it because they're waiters, waitresses, that type of an occupation. They can't afford a $125,000 mortgage. And I just don't think an apartment downtown Point City is the answer to the type of housing that is needed here in Point City. And an apartment really, I think a family deserves to be in a cottage or a home. And I know we have land here in Boyne, maybe Boyne City would be willing to build cottages or something on that. But a big apartment building downtown, I don't know if that's, you know, I don't, we have a parking issue. I just think that there would be better use for that property than little tiny apartments. And it's not like it's permanent housing. It's you know, just a little, it's like dorm housing or married student housing at college or something. It's not really, you know, doesn't really answer the lack of affordable housing problem. And so I just wanted to mention that, and I wish that we could just kind of review everything. I can't even remember the name of the company that was doing it, but we need to look. I remember looking one time on the internet back this spring, and it seemed like they changed their name a little bit, a few times. That seems weird to me. But I mean, if you're truly successful, why would you change your name? And I own the company that's never changed theirs. So it's always been the same. So, you know, that seems weird. But, so if we could, I just wanted that noted that I really think we just need to slow our roll just a little bit here and make sure that it's good for all concerned and not just rush into this, you know, high rise. Again, it took a long time for Glenn Gatt to sell his. I mean, I don't know how many years it took. It seemed like 8 years to sell all of those little condo things that he had going there. And, you know, that really wasn't affordable housing. And I think when he was developing down there where the Sportsman used to be, originally he had talked about having, you know, senior housing up above that, apartments. That's not happening, so maybe we should, that's really maybe an area we should look into the senior housing. You know, cottages or something like that would be something a little better than what we're looking at right now. So I hear the talk around town, and I know if people really care, they'd be here. But I just wanted to mention it because I do care. And I really don't think, you know, I didn't get a tax abatement. I really am not for someone else getting one. You know, why? They're going to make them. Why shouldn't they pay just like me? I'm not for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm Jane McKenzie. With the 847 West Division Street. I'm also with Northern Homes Community Development Corporation, and we have the White House downtown for apartments. It has 3 one-bedroom apartments and 1 two-bedroom, and there's not a week go by that we don't have somebody calling us and asking us if we have an apartment available. Just last week, I helped a woman get an apartment, and last I knew, she was headed up to Conway to get an apartment. She'd much prefer to be in Point City, but there's nothing available in town. We also had another application that we just reviewed today of somebody that actually filled out an application for the White House, and she was over income. She was perfectly happy with one of our one-bedroom apartments, which are not, which would be comparable in size to what's being built. So I really feel there is a strong need for these kind of apartments. There is a need across the broad spectrum, and this just fills one portion of it. What else? So I think this would be a great next step. It doesn't give a final approval, but it does approve the district so that you can do further research and you know, for the next step in the process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes?
I won't say the same thing she did. I think for us, it's been... I'm Scott McKenzie, and I live at 847 West Division Street. I think for the last 20 years, meetings that I've been attending, we've been talking about workforce housing. The one thing Jane did mention is the entire spectrum, from affordable housing, workforce housing, senior housing, all of those things are needed. It seems as though we are so blessed and fortunate that the planets have lined up, that this organization has come to us, this nonprofit organization that is not interested in making money, helping us address our issue of workforce housing in this community. Affordable housing is one thing, but workforce, folks need to pay a little bit more for that, which is totally appropriate. I strongly encourage you to take this next step and move forward to help us address this issue that we've been working on forever. And it seems finally that something's starting to happen, and it would be a shame to go backwards. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I just have a question.
Yes, I forgot to mention the 5-minute limit. You were getting close last time, so.
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to know, who are we talking about when we talk about workforce people?
Well, that's been defined, but we're not really going to get into that debate right now. We're here to create this.
But I don't know. Seriously, Sam, I don't know what is a workforce people.
So let's move on. I'm going to talk to you later, but we're not going to discuss that right now. Okay? Any other comments? Okay, this time I will close the public hearing and we'll go to board deliberation. So before us is a resolution to establish commercial rehabilitation districts. That's what's before us. So, Ron, do you want to start?
Well, I'm in favor of us moving forward with the resolution to create the district. And, you know, without a process like this, that probably could sit there for probably another 20 years. Mm-hmm. But it's not depriving the groups that currently receive taxes, you know, for this this property. So it'll stay in force for, you know, during the duration of the 10 years or 8 years, whatever is granted. But the, as I see it, you know, we look at the different projects that have been done here in Point City. Without a tool like this, they would never happen. I mean, we'd be back like we were 20 years ago. So it's a decision that's, I think it's wonderful that we have a developer like this to possibly, you know, get this off the ground. And I personally have had 5 different couples, all seniors, really wanting to, you know, move into a project like this. They don't want to drive the car. They don't want to do the maintenance. They want to be downtown. I think it's a good fit for Point City.
Thank you, Ron. Dean?
One of the ways I think about this proposal tonight, which is establishing a district, would be asking myself the question, if this project wasn't here at all, if we're thinking about the lots, would we still consider this parcel as being ripe for a redevelopment and worthy of trying to have some way of incentivizing future development there? And I would think the answer in my mind is yes. It's a spot that, at least as long as I've been associated with the city or listening to things, it's a spot that's ripe for redevelopment. There's, you know, a couple of buildings there that aren't the greatest, and in an area that to see something occur there would be worthwhile. And so for that reason, in addition to the, what we anticipate happening there, I think moving forward on this is a good thing for us at this point.
Thank you. Sally?
I would agree with what Dean and Ron both said. And the other thing is, if you saw the first rendering of that, you know, it's gone through a change that makes it, I can see it fit there. But also, 51% of it is my understanding that there's going to be housing for workforce or, you know, affordable. So I'm all for it, really.
Thank you. You?
Yeah, I fully support the resolution, and as Scott had said, it seems like the planets have aligned here with a great developer of finance with Michigan Community Capital, which, visiting their website, I haven't noticed name changes or anything like that, but they work with the MEDC, they work with financial institutions, they're using the new property tax credits, and it's all geared to helping projects like this get off the ground. And I think this is a really good thing for the city to move forward with and to support it as much as we possibly can.
Thank you. I'm in full support also, and as Scott, his report to us in the Planning Commission, it does align with everything. It aligns with the master plan, it aligns with their goals, it aligns with their redevelopment plan, it aligns with the waterfront master plan. It aligns, it meets zoning. And on top of that, it's making our downtown vitality downtown, and providing housing. This is a fantastic project, so I'm in favor also.
Tom, I just have one question for Mike.
Yes.
On the resolution, Mike, this was crafted by Mac McClellan.
Correct.
Was it reviewed by our attorney, or will that come at a later point where our...
It'll be reviewed before we execute it.
Yeah, okay.
Basically, any materials that are in the agenda packet all go to the city attorney for his review, and then he flags me if there's any issues that come up. Also, with regards to the question or discussion we're having a little bit with regards to this chart that was brought up, the June 27th date is not a city commission meeting date. That's a Thursday. And I did check with Matt, I texted him while we were having this discussion here. It does not have to come back to the city commission. If the county chooses to allow it to proceed, it just automatically proceeds on that date.
So the the county is involved because its taxes would be the tax increment. Is that why the county's involved?
If the county's involved because the state law says the county's involved. In this situation, we already have an existing DDA district, so this will not affect the county's taxes at all. Any of those revenues would go to the DDA district anyway. So in this particular instance, there is no financial impact that I'm aware of for the county. If there was no DDA district and there was something else, then it could have a financial implication on the county.
So the city and the county will continue to receive $13,600, plus the schools will receive $70,000 per year once it's constructed?
Generally, that's a correct statement. I don't want to be too precise with regards to it. Some of that $13,000 may already be captured by the DDA, so I don't want to say that they're going to get all of that. I'd have to dig a little deeper to tell you if that's the case or not. But the existing distribution would not be changed.
And whatever current taxes are currently being paid will continue to be paid, twice the $70,000 or whatever that amount is to the school district.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Just one clarification process. After tonight, presumably, we would approve this district. The application comes to us. We do a thorough review of the commission of that application. Can we have another public hearing? Is that correct?
That's correct. There'd be, assuming the district goes forward to completion, then they can submit an application. We have a range of dates that we're, I know down the schedule here, sometime between June 6th and 18th at the Michigan Community Capital would do so. That if that schedule goes forward as it's outlined, that would come back to the City Commission for potential public hearing at our July 9th meeting.
And in that light, the application would be publicly available as well?
Oh, yes. We anticipate that they'd be providing some more financial data at that time that we could share with the community as well, too.
Any further discussion? I would entertain a motion.
I would make a motion that the city approve a resolution to establish a commercial rehabilitation district for the Lofts of Lake Street, LLC, Michigan Community Capital. Is that appropriate?
I think it would only be district, correct? And it's not the specific proposal that hasn't come to us yet.
So, sorry, I couldn't hear what you were saying.
It wouldn't be related to the Lofts. Yeah, if you don't have an application, it will be only for the district.
Basically, what the motion should be is to approve the attached resolution. That's in your agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunge?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Yes?
Just as a side note, a number of the questions that Barbara asked with regards to the wage rates and things like that are included in the materials that are in the agenda packet. We'd be glad that those are available online. So that might be a good place to start to look at for some of those questions you were asking. And then if you have additional questions, I'd be glad to address them.
Can we make those packets available for people who don't have online?
You can come to the library.
There you have it.
Yeah, we did go.
Yeah.
It's not that we had the city at the last meeting, we had the city, get another one.
No, I'm saying they could come to the library and get online. And get
right.
Online. Yeah.
But some...
Those options are out there.
Some do not have the ability, so I just wondered if there was a way they could gain access to getting a copy of this that they could take home and... Mm-hmm. And
okay, thank you, Mike. Moving on to item 9B, 477 Lake Street easements.
Yes, and there's a typo that I didn't catch on the agenda packet. It's actually, there's a difference between the addresses on the agenda and on the memo. It should be 447, so. We've received a request with regards to an easement and working to resolve driveway access issue for a house located at 447 State Street, which would allow it to be sold. Although the house faces State Street, its current access is from the rear across property that the city now owns off of Hannah Street. The city bought the specific property in 2010, the one off of Hannah Street, from the county as part of a tax foreclosure. While the property that we purchased was used in part as the only viable vehicle access for two pieces of property, it had been privately owned and had never been platted or approved as an alley, contrary to what we've heard that some believe. There is an undeveloped but platted alley that does go from just north of the east end of the property at 447 to west to Jefferson Street. However, that alley does not provide viable access to 447 State Street due to a large hill that would be difficult to get up even if the property was clear of trees. So there is an alley, platted but never developed, immediately north of the property that we're talking about, but it's not a viable alley. The city had, some years early, earlier, apparently placed a storm sewer across the property that we purchased in 2010 without obtaining an easement. Our acquisition helped preserve access for the other property owners while protecting our storm sewer, storm drain asset. Since 2010, the informal rear access to 447 State Street has worked as it had for some time, and it still does. However, the issue that's before us today, and the reason it is before us today, is that the property owners' recent efforts to sell their house and property, during that process, it was learned that the prospective owner could only get financing for the purchase with a more formal access secured. So if nothing had changed and the people were there, this matter probably would not have come before the city commission, because the sale is being proposed, and so he needs to get that property financed, and the financial institutions are saying, hey, we need some more direct access, vehicle access for this property. That's why this matter is coming before us. Before you is a draft easement that was prepared by our city attorney, and a survey that was also prepared showing where the non-exclusive easement would be. Those associated with the 447 State Street property are paying for this work to be done. The city would not be responsible for any maintenance associated with this easement. It would affect, in effect, it would continue to be used and operated as a shared driveway.
Thank you.
Oh, hang on, I'm not done yet. Just blow on the computer today, I'm sorry. Recommendation is that the City Commission authorize the City Manager and or City Clerk Treasurer to take the necessary steps to complete and execute the draft right-of-way easement, including any minor modifications necessary to complete this matter. And I do, let's see.
Yes.
Yeah, there's Jane. We do have the realtor that initially provided or asked for this matter to come before us. At this point, on this map here that's coming up, you can see outlined in black the 447 address that immediately to the south of it. This is State Street. It comes in off the access here. This is the property outlined in green here that we acquired in 2010. Before that, that was privately owned. So if we hadn't acquired that, I don't know what these people at 447 would be doing other than asking a private property owner. There is a property immediately to the west of this, where there was a house that was burned down a couple of years ago. They would also have access across that as well, since this would be a non-exclusive easement. So, I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have on this.
Okay. Representing sale?
Could I mention one other thing?
Yes, so, please do. Please do.
Jamie Woodall, real estate agent with Pat O'Brien and Associates, working for my clients. And just so basically, I did call other mortgage brokers and appraisers. The appraiser that was working on this, Kerry South with Northwest Appraisal, they all basically said it would be very, very difficult to receive financing. I asked, is that just FHA loan or is that just a rural development loan? Or is it also conventional? And they said when the secondary mortgage markets, when they buy up their mortgages, they have criteria that would also require passable physical vehicular access to the property. So State Street does have a curb on it now. And so could they put in a driveway because there is deeded access? Yes, but it would be thousands of dollars. Create quite a hiccup there, so that's kind of the issue on that. So at first appearance, it would seem like it's more the buyers, but it's really probably more for the seller selling the property. So.
Thank you. Any comments from staff or the public? All right, let's go to board deliberation. Dean?
I think my question was answered, but let me ask it again just in case. There's two parcels that are involved here, correct? 447, which is where the easement would be written for, and the adjacent property that gains access now. Even though this easement is between the city and 447, if I understand you correctly, that since it's non-exclusive, the parcel on the corner would still be able to gain access by the driveway. Is that correct?
When you say the parcel on the corner, Dean?
Well, it'd be the parcel...
this parcel are you talking about?
On Hannah, the corner.
On Hannah. That currently also gains access by that easement.
The property on the corner of Hannah and State has their own driveway to access this, so they don't need an easement. There's a property on, so that property is east of 447. The property immediately west of 447 would probably be the other likely property that would share that. And currently there is, like I said, there was a house immediately west of 447 a few years ago that was burned down by the fire department at the property owner's request. They still have electricity and I believe a camper up there that they access from time to time. So they would be the other ones that would really need this. The house on the corner of Hannah and State, I think their driveway actually kind of loops through, but if for some reason we close that off, they would still have their own access off of Hannah.
So there wouldn't be a reason to have an easement that mentioned other properties as well, since it's not exclusive. There wouldn't be an opportunity for the owners in the future of 447 to say, I don't like that idea anymore, close off access.
No, they just have permission from us to use our property. That's all that the easement does. It doesn't give them any rights to it, nor any say with regard to
rights, any rights with regard to the easement.
Correct.
Okay, that helps. That answers my question.
Indeed. Sally?
No, I have a question.
And they would do all the maintenance on it as well, right, Mike?
That is correct. Again, we've never maintained it. We're not looking to maintain it. We're just looking. The reason that this is coming up is because they need this to be able to get the financing on the property. So we're doing this. I mean, I think the city really stepped up a few years ago when we acquired this property, both to preserve our control of our extended or storm sewer line that goes there as well, but then basically to protect these property owners that we saw potentially could be not technically landlocked, but at least inconveniently or practically landlocked with regards to, because there are some steep slopes. If you did come up with State, and as Mr. Woodall mentioned, there is possibilities to put some driveways in there, but that'd be reopening some curb cuts, and there's some pretty steep inclines there. It's not impossible, but this is a much easier route to do.
And they can make any improvements if they wanted, say if they wanted to pave it, they could do that with the city's permission?
With the city's permission, yes. And we've done that with other property owners as well, too, where they either on alleys that we don't maintain, we've allowed them to make improvements, but basically with understandings that it's up to them to maintain it going forward, that it doesn't put any additional responsibilities on the city.
Okay,
so,
thanks.
Okay.
I support the recommendation.
I also support the recommendation. Entertain a motion.
Move to authorize the city manager and the city clerk and treasurer to take the necessary steps to complete and execute the draft driveway easement, including any minor modifications necessary to complete this matter.
Second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Oh, can you get that seal?
Yeah. It's an Ohio family. Don't hold it against us.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Not Ohio. Yeah.
Well, they're half okay. Working on it.
Okay. Moving on to item C. Whenever you want to address your appointment.
Sure. I don't know if you want to do it at the beginning or maybe at the end after I kind of give you the update. Kind of, I can tell you what we've been up to and maybe Trisha's involvement in some of that, and that might help inform that decision a little bit.
Okay.
So, I am Monica Krondek and I am the director of the Boyne District Library. So I'm here today to give you all our annual update of what we've been up to at the library. So first I'd like to start out with, I really love this tagline, the library that goes places. We got that from a middle school student because of our bookmobile, so I thought that was just the coolest thing. I could tell you, and I will tell you, about the usual library things like story times and our collections and things like that, but there are a couple of other things I'd like to point out to you that the library also provides to the community that maybe you're not aware of.
One of those things is how the library helps our local businesses. So recently, I don't know if you saw this in the Chamber newsletter or not, but Van Dam Marina, well actually it was Boeing Boatyard, they received several special certificates from the ABYC, which is like some big boat building thing, and it's really great that they got these certificates. And part of the way that they were able to obtain these certificates is through the proctoring that the library provided for them to take those exams here locally. Another way that we support our local businesses is through a ServSafe class that the health department offers at the library in the community, in the conference room rather. So what this does is it allows our local restaurants to provide training to their employees so that they can, you know, safely serve the food that we all enjoy. Another thing that we provide is a lot of services for our health and human service agencies that maybe you're not aware of. So for a lot of our families, there's not places to go to have what they call supervised visits. So that's families who are in turmoil who need a, you know, a safe place to go to have these visits where hopefully their families will be reconnected. So we're providing that space for those families. Another thing that I think that goes unnoticed, a service that the library provides, is the service that we offer to our mentally ill and homeless population. Everyone wants to think of Boyne City as this beautiful community that doesn't touch, but I'm telling you from firsthand experience, it absolutely does. So we see those folks on a very regular basis, and without the library, they wouldn't necessarily have a safe, warm place to go, especially during those cold winter months. We also provide, like I mentioned to Barb earlier, you know, internet access for people who might not have it at home. And you know, it's not always an economic reason why they don't have internet access either. So the library is able to provide that as well. So I just wanted to touch on that a little bit, because you know, we always talk about, you know, our story times and other things, but I just really, like, those are things that I don't think a lot of our community think about on a regular basis. So, some of the fun stuff that we've been up to. So, to brag a little bit, our adult program attendance has more than doubled. So we're making a very concerted effort at the library to involve adults in all of our programming. So you can see, this is a picture of one of our genealogy classes that we offer, and then we also offer a birding program, which was very successful. Our children's programs are at record numbers. So a lot of times, you know, people will walk by our community room and they'll see our story times happening, and they look like fun, and they are really fun. But there's things happening there that you might not realize, like early literacy, or an example in this picture is one of our STEAM activities that we're doing. So we're teaching kids, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math in a fun way. And then, you know, with a lot of our children's programs, as with many of our programs that we do at the library, we try to collaborate with other organizations. So this little guy over here with his magnifying glass, it's actually the Conservation District. We've been able to partner with them to bring these really cool outdoor adventure programs. Our circulation numbers, I'm pleased to report, are up by 50%, which is awesome. So part of that is with our increase of our digital services that we offer, such as Hoopla, which is, you know, allows you to read ebooks, or it's kind of like Audible, but it's free, you know, so that's been really helpful. And then we also have, I mentioned before about the trouble that we have with internet access, we also offer Wi-Fi hotspots that are available to check out, which have been very, very popular. We started out with 5 and had to increase to 10. We have 10 hotspots available now. Also, you know, we have the Michigan Electronic Library, which is, you know, just as popular as it ever was. And what that allows us to do is to borrow materials from other libraries so we can get, we've also, you know, we can help college students, you know, check out and borrow textbooks that way. So that's been really cool. We're seeing an increase in our meeting room reservations. So, you know, we provide services for, you know, our local groups like Main Street. They have a lot of their committee meetings. The Lions Club meets at the library. The Rotary Club meets. You know, we're support to our local nonprofits. Challenge Mountain Board meets at the library, as well as Raven Hill Discovery Center. And I mentioned the Health and Human Services. They also have staff trainings that use the library's community room on a regular basis. One of an event that I'm very proud of that we were able to help with is the Head Start across the street. They had their graduation ceremony at the library, which was really cool. And then, of course, we have our bookmobile. So this is a new project to us, and we're very pleased to see how it's really helped with our circulation numbers, for one. So we've been making regular stops to the Brook, the Litzenberg Place, Deer Meadows, and then also the schools. And we found that we're circulating, so just to kind of give you a rough idea, the library circulates on average 3,000 items a month, which is great, but the bookmobile is at right around 600 items a month. So, and that's just traveling to the elementary school, the middle school, and that's every other week visit. So you can see we have a stop at the elementary school up there. That's what that one photo is. And it's been really popular, and I'd like to just take a second to share with you a letter that we actually received. We just had to wrap up our visits, and we're starting to collect all the books, but this was a really nice letter, I thought, that we received from a middle school student. And they said, thank you for coming every 2 weeks. And help us find books for us. My favorite book was the Fortnite books. If you weren't there, I could have never been able to read at home or at school. One of the things that we're finding by making these stops, especially to the school, is that it's really getting kids engaged in reading again, because they're excited to have new materials. So this has been a really good partnership for both us and the school. And, you know, it's a little selfish on our part, or there's a little bit of maybe some self-interest in that. What we're hoping to do is build lifelong library users. So they're going to have this really great experience with the library, and then they're going to know that we're the go-to place moving forward. So we're really excited about that. Plus, when they see the bookmobile in their, you know, neighborhoods and community, they'll want to stop in and check it out. So that's something. So our summer plans. So we have planned stops for the bookmobile. I just found out today, and was one of our stops that we were hoping to be able to do was to go up to Parkview Apartments. But I just found out today that they're not going to let us come, which is a kind of a bummer. But we are also planning to go to the trailer park. We're going to go to It's the
Manufactured Housing Community.
Thank you. Manufactured Housing Community. We're also going to be going to the farmer's market and stroll the streets. We're going to be out at Bay Township Hall and Wilson Township Hall. We're going to be at Young State Park and Whiting Park. So just look for us. We're going to be as many places as we can possibly be. We're kicking off our summer reading program for kids. I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's this new law that the Michigan Department of Education just passed that every student in Michigan has to be at grade level by third grade. So for a lot of kiddos, you know, this summer, I'm sure you've all heard of what they call summer slag, where kids, you know, they take that break. So we're hoping to keep those kids reading all summer long. And this year, we're trying a new program. We're going to have an adult summer reading program as well to get adults reading. So we have some cool prizes. You just have to read, you know, 8 books in 6 weeks. Should be able to pull it off.
Is there a state law expectation for adults too?
Yes. We have to at least, no. There should be, but. So that's what we have planned for the summer. And then one of the things that we've been working on really hard over the winter months, and something that I'm very proud of, is we're rolling out our new strategic plan. So I don't know if I think you all received a copy of the strategic plan in your board packets. I have hard copies in case anybody wants one of those. So, you know, it's hard, and, you know, we had to really, so we did the usual things that you do with your strategic plan. We went over our mission statement and our core values, and then we went from there and established some goals. And one of the things that I was excited about is we walked away with what I think are 3 really good, purposeful goals. So our first one is organizational and operational excellence. So this is a huge goal. But an example of how we would achieve this goal is through better board engagement, staff training, things like that. We're also going to be working really hard on establishing some strong relationships with our stakeholders, so that's everyone in this room, but then also targeting individual groups and how we can have meaningful partnerships. And then our last goal is for Boyne District Library to be recognized as the go-to for access to knowledge and resources. So we want people, when they think, gosh, I really need to print something, or I need information about this, or, you know, we want them to think to come to us. So that's going to be, that is also one of our goals. So if we're successful, we will have a community of readers, learners, doers, and dreamers who are locally engaged and globally. Hopefully, in the next 3 years, we'll be doing just that. So, do you all have any questions?
How many people fit in that mobile?
I'm not sure like what the fire code like legal rule is. we fit 30 kids in there at once. So, yeah, it's pretty sweet. Any other questions?
Yeah, open us up to anybody, audience, and or commissioners.
I did have a comment. Great work, you know, every year. It seems like there's new stuff going on in the library, and I'm pleased to see the circulation numbers going up so much. That's terrific, and increased activities is great. I did notice in the strategic plan a brief mention of the Red Barn.
Yes.
Could you talk a little more about your plans for the Red Barn?
Sure, so right now the Red Barn, the half that wasn't the farmer's market half, serves as the garage for our bookmobile. So that's what we're using that for. The other half of the Red Building, actually we're using it for library programming. So we were just able to host a program where we partnered with Upsy Daisy and we did a flower planting class. So we're gonna host a lot of our youth programming out there too. We're hoping that the Red Building will get us through. In order to pay for the renovations that we did to the Red Building to make it usable for the bookmobile garage, it has to carry for the next 5 years. So in 5 years, we'll reevaluate and see where we go from there.
I wonder if there would be an opportunity. I know we've been working a lot in our downtown area we have the facade program and other things to improve the appearance. I wonder if there was any discussion of a shorter term goal to improve the exterior of the Red Barn so it doesn't maybe is more consistent with our goals.
More attractive, maybe?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You know, part of our strategic plan is that we're going to be doing a capital improvement plan, and so I'm sure that the Red Building will come up and be part of that as well. So, but yeah, it's definitely something that we've thought about also.
Is that an option for the facade improvement program to partner with the library, and why wouldn't it be?
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Dean.
Oh, yeah.
They're planting that seed.
Yeah. Monica, I'm still confused about the library opting out of the TIF, if they have or they haven't.
We have not. So we did our research and we found out that actually, because there was no change to the TIF, we could never opt out. So we are still opted in and we will be in for the life of the TIF until something changes.
And I noticed in...
Or it's renewed, which I think 2023 is when it's...
24,
yeah.
And then you mentioned something about the snow plowing in the parking lot. Are there issues there that you have?
Well, just, you know, because isn't snow removal always an issue in Boyne City, you know? So we have people who complain about how high the banks are, or if it's a really icy morning, you know, what can we do about that to kind of, you know, make it safer for our patrons using the library? So that was just a concern.
Another question I've always had about the bookmobile going to the schools, does the school compensate the library for providing those services that they once did and they don't now? Or how did all that come about that the schools aren't providing those media services to students?
Well, you know, obviously the school is stretched with their budget, so that was part of it. And for us, we just saw it as an opportunity to be able to provide those library services. I can't really speak for the school. I mean, and to answer your question, no, we don't receive any sort of compensation for that. Like I said, for us, it's like we feel that we are, you know, trained library users, and we see it as a way to kind of bridge that gap. But no, the school does not compensate.
So is it part of the curriculum then for like second graders?
It's strictly voluntary. They can come or not come. We just provide the service for them. Yes, Barb?
Hi. I just wanted to commend you. I know that you have a technical person that helps with... we do have a great deal of seniors in this area. Also, some young adults who are not technically enhanced. They, didn't come up with an iPad. And they are able to go down to the library. And Cindy works one-on-one with them. And the library does have computers. It's like they could look up all this stuff that we're discussing tonight. But if you don't have computer skills, which I would say a great deal of your people don't have, they can go to the library, but the computers aren't well used.
Yeah, really.
And I do want to commend you for having Cindy there. She has a great deal of patience.
Yeah.
And can explain things. And I've seen her do it with the young and the old, right down to sub-zero.
Yeah.
So that's a very nice thing that we have there.
So part of what we're asking tonight, so the Library Board of Trustees unanimously recommends Trish Wright to be appointed to the Library Board of Trustees as your city representative. Trish has been involved in the Friends of the Library, so we feel like, the board felt like, and I also feel like she would be a good match just because she knows so much about the library. She was involved in helping us with the strategic planning process as a member, as a Friends representative, but we feel like she would be a really good, strong representative for the city.
Well, thank you. Great job.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. So, what we're going to do, we have to make a motion to approve or not approve Trish, as far as your role. So the presentation, we have no action items involved with the presentation. Thank you.
I also do have a copy of the latest print library newsletter, which has all of this cool summer stuff that I was talking about that I'll leave for anybody who wants to take a copy, as well as our strategic plan if anyone's interested in taking a look.
Okay. Any further discussion on between the board here?
Well, the one thing that I just wanted to clarify is, so it's a district library board, correct, Monica?
Yes. Yep.
So there are three representatives from Boyne City.
Yes.
A couple from Bay Township.
One from Bay, one from Wilson, one from Evelyn, and one from Bay.
So has it been a process where the library just makes a recommendation, the library board, for the city representatives?
And it all, for actually all representatives for the library.
So was there any like notification that there was a board seat? One of our goals is to have more community engagement,
mm-hmm.
to advertise the fact that board openings are available and that sort of thing. So it just seems kind of strange to me that a library appoint Trish is the best candidate, for this position. I'm just talking about a process as we move forward. That possibly we are informed of when there's an opening, we can notify the community that there is an opening and that we make the appointment rather than did anyone else apply? Did anyone else know to apply?
Honestly, a lot of times, I don't know if you experience this with other boards, but it's kind of feast or famine when it comes to board members, and so you end up begging people to serve on boards. So not anyone that was not anyone as qualified as Trish,
right.
I guess, is what.
So I'm just thinking in the future that, if we could follow this process once we get it together, then it certainly would involve the library.
We're looking at part of our strategic plan is the board engagement piece, so maybe that's something we could work on together to try to figure out a better way to do
right.
that and recruit board members.
So what board member's going off?
Chris Bandy.
Oh, right into our goals. Yeah. We're multi.
Yeah. And your other two, so Jack Laurent is also a city representative, as well as Daniel Schwartz.
And she was a fill-in for someone who resigned?
Right, Lucy Hartlove. She finished her term, but then we looked at the bylaws, and she's able to serve two consecutive terms, and the terms are 4 years. So.
Okay. So I would entertain a motion for item 3B.
So move to appoint Trisha Wright to the Point District Board Library. For the term expiring on April 30th, 2023 or 4?
2023, yeah.
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Needhammer?
Yes.
Page?
Yes.
Solomon?
Yes.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunge?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Good. Okay. Moving on to item D, Marina Rate Discount Incentives.
Thank you. A couple weeks ago, I met with the DNR State Harbor Coordinator. We were working on advancing the central reservation system for the marina to get that going for the summer. And while we were talking about rates. The rates that we adopted with our budget fee schedule that the DNR approved is all fine, except the central reservation system has a difficult time with rates outside of the standard. So we were working on all that. And in the discussion, we started talking about discounts and, you know, off-season items and how those are handled with that central reservation system. And during that discussion, I found out that at some of the state harbors, they actually offer a discounted rate during the slower seasons, not necessarily just before Memorial Day or after Labor Day. For people to do extended stays versus, you know, a lot of places such as ourselves has this policy of 14 days in, 24 hours out, which unless we're busy and we have people waiting to come in, that's generally not enforced. There's no reason to make somebody leave to have the slip sit empty for 24 hours. So we talked about all those various things, and she said that the state, while they still want to be informed of what we were doing, they were very open to some of these other discount options, you know, that people are coming up with. And so I thought that it made sense for us. Like June, for example, tends to be a slower month. You know, we have bookings on the weekends, but not so much during the week until we get much closer to the end of the month before the 4th of July. And I thought one of the things that we could look at doing is maybe offering a little bit of a discount for the month of June. So instead of people just coming up on the weekends, pulling their boat out during the week, if they have a little bit of a discount, they might just stay the whole month, which is additional revenue for us that we wouldn't have had. And it's helpful to the customers as well. I also talked with the DNR representative about the fall season. You know, we do a stay one night, get one night free. She said one of the things that they were looking at implementing, which they haven't yet, but they're having those discussions for the state harbors, is what they call bookends, where if you book two consecutive weekends and pay for those weekends, you get to stay, leave your boat in the whole week for free. And again, same thing. If they pulled the boat on Sunday, it's not like we have somebody coming in Monday through Thursday, and they're coming back Friday anyways. You know, a lot of these people maybe live downstate, and they're kind of like the weekend warriors. Kids are back in school, but it's nice weather. They still want to come up. And so it's something nice that we can offer our regular customers. It doesn't hurt us at all. In fact, it could be helpful because they're paying for those two weekends regardless. So even if the weather's bad, if the boat wasn't already here, they'd probably consider canceling. This way, they're already paid for both of those weekends, and they'll just, whether they come or not, the boat's there and it's paid for. So anyway, she said that there are lots of options, you know, scenarios that we could come up with and implement. They would just want to be informed of what we were doing. So basically this evening, I'm just here asking for permission to work with the city manager, to come up with some of these slower season discounts or incentives without having to come back for approval every single time we come up with a great idea.
I have a question. So do you see this being effective for locals too that want to fish in June or fish in September?
For anybody.
For anybody.
Yep,
I can see that if they do one in every single day, and there was a slip, maybe just put it in for a longer extended fishing season.
Yep, absolutely. So it, I don't foresee us coming up, there's no reason to offer these, you know, any kind of incentive or discount through the month of July and even through the majority of August, really. You know, it's June, well, you know, because school's still in season, there's graduations and all these different things, so June really does not pick up until we get to about the, depending on how it falls, between the 20th, 25th, right in there.
What is the occupancy rate in June? And
Our weekends do well, but during the week we really don't have anybody. The transients that we do have during the week are usually larger vessels that are not as easy to trailer. So sometimes, you know, they'll stay in. But other than that, it's pretty low until we get closer to the end of June.
This won't, the new state system, reservation system that we're working in now won't mess you up.
There's workarounds for all of that. I mean, we can certainly override. I mean, there's that option within the system to give refunds, to override rates and stuff are available. It could affect, so if we're giving, say, a 25% discount and you make your reservation online, you would actually online have to pay the full rate. And then we would have to give a refund for that discounted amount. But so there's workarounds for all of that.
Any questions from the audience? Staff? Yes, Mike.
I think this is just another example of us trying cutting edge techniques or new procedures to both generate additional traffic in the community and additional revenues for the marina, both of which are priorities, I think, for our marina. Department's done a great job with that over the years. Your connections with the state, I think, are continuing to help us, and I think this is worth a try. We can monitor it and see how it's working. If it works, you know, as we anticipate, we can continue to go forward with it. If not, we can pull back.
Okay.
I think Barb's done a wonderful job, too. I know from being a boat owner myself, but also I think it would be a really popular idea. You have a lot of local people that, you know, I have no interest in using Lake Charlevoix during July and August. I mean, you just got too many jet skis and all kinds of junk going on out there. But, you know, so you would travel on to other places to do your, if you're fishing. And I just think that, you know, it would be a real popular idea with a lot of local people that are paying, you know, taxes and things like that. I think they would take a slip for a short time. They really would. And they would like the opportunity to do so. I mean, why not? Part of May, you know, through the third week of June, I think that'd be a cool idea. You know, it's certainly workable. I mean, I've seen it work. I mean, we lived in, this was our 18th move, and we've got boat everywhere, so I've seen it work in other communities, so it'd be a forward-thinking idea.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to the board. How are you?
Oh, I'm good.
Okay. Ron?
I support the recommendation.
I'm good. Yep. Sally? Good. I'm awesome. Looking for a motion.
I'll make a motion to allow the harbor master, with approval of the city manager, to offer various discounts during slower times of the boating season to improve boat traffic and additional revenue.
A second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Page.
Aye.
Salomon.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Crunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Let's go to good of the order.
I had a couple things. Tom, one had to do with the committee we talked about, evaluation form from the city manager. We
yes.
Maybe get that figured out sometime soon. The other thing are these screens here, Mike. I just wonder if were able to make any progress on the screen, you know, particularly with light tonight.
Yeah, we're reviewing a couple options with regards to devices that will allow us to broadcast on. I'm hoping probably by July that should have us all up and running.
Good. I think, this has to do with, Barb sent something out about Auburn. The Auburn Marsh in there. Are we going to discuss this at some future point in a meeting? The summary that they provided us, or
we certainly could.
It's dated May 20th. Just to kind of go through it together.
What's that, Barb, weigh in on that? It's a good point. Yeah.
That's part one, and I think that maybe at some point a work session or something would be in order to have that discussion. I'm waiting for the second part of that, which deals a little bit more with the economics of.
Uh-huh.
And so once I get the whole package, maybe we could have a work session.
Yeah.
Our board, are you in favor of that? Okay. So Mike, when we get all the information, somehow we need to go over that as a group.
Sure.
Thank you. Anything else? I don't have anything. So, let's see here. The announcements, there will be a tariff party for Shelby County Clerk Sherry Brow. Is it Brow or Brow?
Brow.
Brow, I'm sorry. On Friday, May 31st, from 2 to 4, at the Shelby County Commissioner's Room. That's this Friday. And the next regular City Commission meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, June 11th. It's printed as the 9th, but it's actually the 11th at 7 p.m. And at 8:21,